Isn't it great when you have something to look forward to, like the latest episode of this podcast, or even better, an amazing Italian getaway? Well, Explore Worldwide's new Amalfi Coast Discovery Tour is a slice of heaven. I'll be telling you more about it later in the podcast, but for now, I'll leave you with this. Their big blue sale is now on, and you'll save up to 20% on Explore's most popular small group adventures. Click the link in the episode description or book at exploreworldwide.com.au and don't just travel, explore.
A Listener Production.
I'm a quiet person in general, but I always wanted to be a model. That's all I ever wanted to do. Maybe I didn't believe in myself. And at such a young age, you know, I've got media publications going, this girl's amazing, she's going to be this, she's going to be that. And I still didn't believe in myself.
Hi, I'm Jess Rowe, and this is the Jess Rowe Big Talk Show, a podcast that skips the small talk and goes big and deep. From love to loss and everything in between, I want to show you a different side of people who seem to have it all together in these raw and honest conversations about the things that matter. Samantha Harris is a supermodel. She's one of the most recognisable faces in Australian fashion. Indeed, my teenage daughter grew up seeing Sam's face in magazines and fashion and makeup campaigns. But Samantha is a trailblazer, one of the first Indigenous models to be on the cover of Australian Vogue. And when she started her career, there weren't many other girls like her. However, her mother never stopped believing in her and knew even as a baby that her daughter was destined for great things. When we spoke, Samantha had just released a book, Role Model, a joint memoir that she shares with her mum. And she's also going to become a first-time mum at any moment now. Samantha Harris, congratulations on your beautiful book, Role Model. And my daughter is obsessed with you. And she can't wait to read it. I read it very quickly over a couple of days. And I'm wondering for you, you know, you've just launched this extraordinary book, but you're about to embark on another new chapter in your life. You're going to become a mum.
I am. A mum to a daughter too. So a little girl. So I'm very excited.
So what does that sort of mean to you? Can you get your head around that, that you're soon to be a mum?
Do you know what? Me and my husband are so excited, like obviously very excited, but we were folding the clothes the other day and we were both looking at ourselves going, oh my God, there's someone going to be wearing these very soon. Like it's very bizarre, very exciting, but can't kind of wrap my head around it.
You're incredibly close to your mum and you now soon to be a mum. What is that, I suppose, meant for the two of you?
We've become closer, I think, if that's even possible. And I think especially because I'm having a little girl and, you know, I'm one of four. I've got three brothers and then there's me. So, yeah, it's definitely brought us closer.
And as you say, if that's possible.
Yes.
Because you and your mum, you do share quite a bond. And your mum, she did have this sort of sense of you were going to do something quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
Why did she feel that? What was it?
I don't know. But she, like, as you probably would have read in the book, like, she had a very strong feeling that I was going to do something that would make Australia take notice or the world take notice. I couldn't tell you why she thought that. I'm very happy that she thought that. So thanks, Mum. But yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe just Mum's intuition. I'm not sure.
So pretty much from the age of, what, four or so, you did pageants, didn't you?
Yes.
And what was that experience like as a little girl?
I loved it. It's not pageants like, you know, in America when, you know, tiaras and all that kind of stuff. It was basically just in-store catwalk shows. For a very shy girl, I loved being on stage. I didn't want to, if I had to talk, I would not say a word, but get me on the stage and I was a whole different person.
And isn't that ironic that a little girl who was painfully shy, as you say, has carved this extraordinary, very public career.
Yeah.
So where then does that drive come from?
I think, you know, let's talk about my mum. So my mum went through, you know, she had a tough childhood. She was part of the Stolen Generation. You know, she went to a girls' home with her three sisters. And she had the drive. So basically, every Sunday they would line these girls up. They'd be all dressed in white and families would come and go, I want to take this child home for the weekend and potentially adopt them. My mum's the oldest of her two siblings. One of the older girls goes, Myrna, you know, if you're good, they will take you and you'll never see your sisters again. So my mum, being a naughty little girl, she they lived near the water, these people, and she would throw sand and chuck it and make a mess. So she never got adopted. And, you know, that's the determination in itself, right? To be determined not to be taken away from your sisters. And, you know, so these are all together. So I think my drive has probably come from my mum. You know, obviously completely different scale, but very determined woman, just like my mother.
Exactly. And your mum, who also shares her story in your book, the life that she has forged, not only for herself, but for her children, she really wanted to make sure that all of her children were seen in a way that perhaps she wasn't.
100%. And seen in a way, one of her main things, like every time I call her, you know, I call her daily, she'll always say, love you. And, you know, she still has little nicknames for us, even though we're adults. And just, you know, the main thing is love. She can't give enough love to her children. You know, perhaps she didn't get the love that she wanted when she was younger. And, you know, she, you know, had a very traumatic upbringing. But, you know, when we say that she gave us, you know, everything she didn't have, it was just basic things, like very grateful for my upbringing. But all she wanted, you know, was just love and, you know, just to be there for her kids.
And as you say, she's always there.
Yeah.
And she sends you messages and she also sends your husband messages.
Yes.
And when I read those messages, my heart melted. I thought, what a beautiful, loving, glorious woman.
Yeah.
What are some of those things that she would say to you and keep saying to you?
Yeah. It'll be out of the blue. You know, it might be in the morning watching TV and you just get this novel of a message. And, you know, she'll send it to all her kids. My husband, she says that, you know, my husband's her son too. So now she has four sons. I was like, Mum, we're not brother and sister, but okay. So Luke will get the messages too. And she's just pouring her heart into the messages, just saying how much she loves us and, you know, she'll always be there for us, even when she's not here. And I'm like, Mum, you don't need to add that in there yet. But just really beautiful and really touching messages.
You're now holding her hand.
Yes.
Through many things. She held your hand as a little girl. And her determination to make your dreams come true. When you went to the girlfriend competition, share with us what that was like, what your mum had to do to make that possible.
Yeah. My uncle saw a newspaper clipping, it would have been about this big in the newspaper. And, you know, basically they had the Brisbane Roadshow, or you could just send in a picture and that you could be judged in that way. So mum called the girlfriend headquarters, said, look, I want to send a picture of my daughter in. And they were like, that's cut, that's done. Like, you know, the date's
you've
passed.
Missed
yeah, you've missed that part. But she can go to Brisbane. And mum's thinking, okay, that's, you know, that sounds great. But we didn't have a lot of money growing up and we had a really busy household. So we lived in a 3-bedroom housing commission house. Mum, dad, my little brother, my older brother, he got a girlfriend. They had a baby. So my niece and my mum raised my two cousins. So very busy, very joyful, very fun house. But mum didn't have the money and was like, I can't justify, you know, or I can't afford to get Samantha up there. So basically she would ring around to a few different Aboriginal organisations in the Tweed and said, look, you know, explain the situation. There's this modelling competition. I believe my daughter has something special, all that kind of stuff. But she was knocked back. And they were like, basically, look, we only fund sporting, kids going away for sport. Modelling's not a sport. And we don't believe that Australia's ready for an Aboriginal model. Which really obviously upset my mum. I didn't know that these conversations happened because I was only a kid. I was running around playing, have a great old time, none the wiser. But there was one organisation, Kurungal, that helped us. You know, forever grateful for them because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here sitting chatting to you. So that was the first step. So, you know, we got some funding to go up to Brisbane. And this is before iPhone. So my mum was writing on the back of a bill envelope. She rang up New South Wales Translink. So we had to get a bus, train, find where we stop and where we change and how far do we have to walk to the next bus. So we did all that in the pouring rain. So it's like the odds were against us. It's like everything was saying, it's not going to happen. But we made it happen, got to the hotel. It was at Westfield Carindale, the model search, and we were just across the road. All this happening and, you know, what mum had to go through to get me there, me and my little brother were none the wiser. We were like, this is great. We're in a hotel. Like, we'd never stayed in a hotel before. Had room service. We're having a ball. And then little old mum just kept going and here I am today.
And also, on top of that too, your mum was terrified of the wind.
Yes, it's a funny thing to be terrified of, right?
It is, but I suppose in part of your mum's story, there's things that we don't know that perhaps she hasn't shared.
Yeah.
So she was scared of the wind and also getting into a lift.
Yes.
And to get into the hotel, she had to get into a lift, didn't she?
Yeah. She's absolutely terrified, even to this day. If we're ever at a lift, she kind of just stands there and I hold her hand and I'm like, just don't look, Mum, it's fine, it's fine. And if too many people get in, she starts getting nervous and she's a funny little character, but she does it. I'm like, as long as you look at me, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
So you hold her hand and I think about the incredible bravery that it took for your mum.
Yeah.
And that love for you to make this possible for you to face these terrible fears.
Yeah.
And to go, no, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I'm going to get in the lift. I'm going to face the wind.
And so she did all of those things. What happened then with the competition?
So the next morning, we get up early. I'm super excited. My mum's super excited. Blow dries my hair, does my makeup, and we walk over to Westfield. We get there before the competition even starts. No one has even started lining up at this point. This is how eager I was. I don't remember, but my mum remembers and Ursula from Chic remembers. She walked over and, you know, Ursula saw me and was like, you know, she was like, who's this girl? This girl's amazing. She came over and she made sure, she was like, are you entering the competition? And I would have said yes very quietly. Mum would have spoken to her and she was like, make sure you come back. Don't leave, come back. She was like, just go have breakfast and yeah, come back and we'll, you know, enter the competition. And I said to Ursula, I was like, it's like 22 years ago that happened. How do you know how it all played out? She goes, Samantha, I know exactly how it went down. And I said, well, if you know, where did I go for breakfast? And she goes, you went upstairs to McDonald's. And I was like, okay, fair call, yes.
You got on the catwalk. And what happens when you get on the catwalk?
Do you know what? It's weird. Like it's, even when I walk on the catwalk and runway shows now, when I say this, I don't want to say that it's like I've got a big head because that's not the case at all. It's where I belong, but I walk on there and I think, this is my catwalk. Why are there other people on there?
Yes.
I really enjoy it. I have so much fun. I think I just become not someone different. That's probably the wrong wording, but I don't know. I just feel so confident and I just love it.
It is where you belong. You then began your modelling career and the thing, I suppose, with modelling is it looks very glamorous.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And a lot of heartache and rejection that comes along with it. What was that like? I mean, you went to New York when you were 14.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that New York is a mind-boggling place as a grown-up.
Yeah.
Let alone as a 14-year-old. What was that like?
I couldn't put into words how I felt. Like, the only time I'd seen New York was in movies, right? But, yeah, the agency, they rang me and they were like, look, the next models in New York, they want you to fly over there to shoot with Patrick Demichelier. Keep in mind, I'm a 14-year-old girl. I have no idea who that is. I'm like, oh, that's nice.
He is one of the most legendary photographers of all time.
Yeah. And he's picked me for one of, you know, world's iconic beauties. Again, at 14, I was like, oh, that's nice. Like, I didn't comprehend in my head how exciting and how special it was. I never had a passport, so that was an experience in itself. Like, again, mum, doing what mum did. So we had to get my birth certificate, my passport, and I think we had a week. So that was a very stressful week for mum, me, you know, being a kid in La La Land. So thank you, mum.
And also a massive thing for your mum. Like, she's sending you off into the wider world.
Yeah, into another country. I never thought of that, actually. Oh, she would have been terrified.
Yes, absolutely terrified.
But I did have a chauffeur, so I didn't. It's not like I was going there by myself, which was nice. But still, in itself, like, I suppose sending your child, I don't like leaving my dog behind with people, let alone a child.
But as you say, there was a chaperone with you, but it is a huge undertaking. So you've got one of the world's top photographers taking your photo, but then what did it mean then when you saw your picture and sort of how you were described?
It was interesting. Like, I didn't think the picture was that great. I was like, I flew all that way for a picture that's like, and I'm just sitting there. But then I think it was high forehead. I was like, what's wrong with my forehead? I was like, come on, like, you could have picked anything else. And I was kind of looking like, is it really big? Like, I'm kind of measuring it. Like, but do you know what? I had a little laugh about it, but I feel like there's a bit more iconic features to me than my forehead, right?
Of course there is.
My lips, maybe. Maybe you should have done my lips.
Well, and your beautiful eyes, which are just they're gentle but strong. That's what my daughter describes your eyes as. She just thinks you're so glorious. And I think too, you know, as a young teenager, it's hard enough.
Yeah.
But there you are with that added scrutiny of everyone looking at you.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that?
It didn't upset me or anything. But now I look back, like, you know, they think I did a Marie Claire shoot and then bee-stung lips and this big... This big photo. We're not really painting a picture of a model, are we? When you think about it. Big eyes. Do you know what? I didn't really read it. I wanted to be a model so bad. I was more wrapped up in the pictures and I was so proud and honoured that I was in magazines. So the rest, I didn't really care.
And there is, though, some rejection.
Yes.
Where you might go for jobs. And I adored what your mum said. I mean, she said that they'll be ready for your look one day.
Yes.
Didn't she?
Well, this goes back to the modelling competitions in Tweed. I would always make the finals and I would never, ever win. And I would have entered more than 20, so quite a number of these different beauty pageants. Never won. I just wanted to win one. And the older I got, you know, very disheartening. You know, I'd cry and mum would say, they're not ready for your look yet. They will be one day. And she was right.
And she was.
Yeah.
You were one of the first Indigenous models on the cover of Australian Vogue.
I was.
What was that like?
Oh, that in itself, it's still a pinch me moment. Like, I can't put into words how proud I was. I think a few months prior, I was in I did an editorial in Vogue for Miu Miu, which was amazing. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I was so excited. And then a few months later, my agency was like, you're going to be a potential cover. And I just, oh my God, like, how do we go from here to here so quickly?
I mean, it sounds like it has been fast, but there was a lot of work that went into that moment, wasn't there?
Yes. As you said, like, modelling, it looks glamorous. It is glamorous, but there's so much more work. You know, you've got to go to castings, you know, you've got to do test shoots to build your portfolio, but to make yourself comfortable behind the camera, it's not as easy as just standing there taking a photo. There's so much more in-depth kind of things that you need to do. So it was a lot of time in the making, but it was so worth it.
And it is such a beautiful image. You, though, essentially, you flew from, was it from London?
Yeah, I was in London for a month for Fashion Week casting. So I was, you know, very nervous to be in London. Everyone was lovely, but, you know, you're away from your family and it's hard. You don't know where you're going. But even doing the castings, a lot of the casting directors said, look, we're looking for someone more European. And I was like, okay, great. Like, that's what you're saying with the rejection. But that's the look they're going for. It's not anything. It's not, we don't like you. It's just the vision that they had. But a lot of them had the same vision, which, you know, sucked. I was like, I'm here for a fashion week. Hopefully I get one show, at least. Give me one. But I remember going to my agency next in London and my booker, Robert, was like, oh, you might be going home early. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I was happy because I wanted to go home. But I was like, it better be something good. Like, I've been here for a whole month wanting to at least hopefully snag one show. And he goes, you're shooting the Vogue cover. I was like, oh, okay. Yes, let's go right now.
That is something good.
Yes.
Also as well with, and you talk about this in your book, a lot of the castings that you go to, some people weren't quite sure where to sort of put you, so to speak.
Yes.
When you'd be saying, well, I'm an Indigenous woman.
Yeah. That would obviously mainly happen overseas. So, you know, they thought I was everything under the sun but Aboriginal. And then when I would say I'm Aboriginal, they'd be like, what country is that? And you're like, how can you not know? Like, at least the slightest bit. Like, I'm happy that I look like a whole different vast range. So you would think I'd be more, you know, applicable for different jobs. But, yeah, it was a little bit disheartening. I was like, having to explain to them, and it was an interesting thing to do because at that point I was still very young, so I couldn't, again, wrap my head around how they didn't know.
Remember, your next international getaway dream can come true with Explore Worldwide's Big Blue Sail. Their small group adventures allow you to really connect with the culture, not just tick off the sights. Explore Worldwide's expert tour leaders get you closer to the colour of Morocco, the peaceful beauty of Japan, or the hidden gems under the glorious Italian sunshine. And with their Big Blue Sail on now, you'll save up to 20% on Explore's most popular small group adventures. Click the link in the episode description or book at exploreworldwide.com.au and don't just travel, explore.
Your mother is a very proud Aboriginal woman as well. What sort of things did she teach you about your culture?
She didn't teach too much because she was taken away from her family at such a young age. And when they came back, my nan had another family with someone else. So they were kind of, you know, there was one family and then there was my mum and her sister. So didn't teach us too much. But the older she's getting now, she's just telling us a little bit more bits and pieces about her childhood, about her life, or like, you know, she'll say when she was with her auntie, her and her two sisters, they would live off the land, but also kind of like move so the welfare couldn't find them, right? And she'll say different stories like, you know, her auntie would be like, you can't swim there. You know, it's a sacred site. Mum wouldn't know why, but my auntie would be like, girl, you can't swim there. Mum being mum, she'd be like, why can't I swim there? And, you know, the auntie was like, don't question me. You know, she'd say how she, you know, they lived off the land and ate goannas or birds and all these things. And when we were younger, we were like, mum, that's gross, but not understanding the reasoning behind it. So she's taught us different things like that and told us about her life in that aspect. But reading her story, we're reading it for the first time too. We know bits and pieces, but we're hearing it for the first time just like you are.
And what does that mean for you then to read the incredible life that your mum has had?
A few of the chapters has been hard. Like, you know, it'd be a sad story, resilient story, but, you know, some of the chapters are a bit heartbreaking in itself for anyone to read. But I think because it is my mum, it's sad. But then you read, you know, she went on to have kids and, you know, had a beautiful life. So she was a trailblazer in herself.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You both are trailblazers. Yeah. And the way your mum, her extraordinary love, as you say, resilience, courage to carve this extraordinary life for herself and for her family.
Yeah.
I want to meet your mum.
Oh, well, I was actually just thinking, I was like, you should bring her into a podcast.
Oh,
she's a great storyteller.
Oh, and I'd love to give her a big hug. She looks like she'd be a good hugger, your mum. There was also some parts that you share when you travelled with your mum,
mm-hmm.
but the importance for her, though, of meeting the elders.
Yes.
And having special ceremonies. I found that very moving.
Yeah, no, we went to Broome for World Vision Australia, and we went out to the remote Indigenous communities. And again, to get mum on the plane, she didn't like flying. So I told her that from Melbourne to Broome was 2 hours. When it's really 5.
But you don't need to know that,
no, mum. She didn't need to know that. She was already on the plane. We get to Broome, and I'm excited to be there with mum and to go out to remote communities with mum. But she was really adamant that we see in elders, we get smoked before we come in because, you know, that's not our country. We're not from there. So we need to be welcomed in. So nothing bad happens to us or, you know, spirits come home with, I don't want that to happen. I didn't understand the concept, like, you know, I grew up completely different to my mum. So again, I'm thinking, mum, you're just being dramatic. But when she explained it to me, I was like, oh, you know, I apologize. I was like, I'm sorry. I didn't understand. I didn't realize how important it was. And when we were smoked, funnily enough, the smoke was steering more towards me and mum. It wasn't a windy day either. So it was very interesting and very special. Mum had asked the elders, is it okay for us to swim? You know, they have beautiful water holes and things like that. And they were like, look, you know, throw some rocks in and, you know, let the ancestors know that you're here and you're not from here and that kind of stuff. But even mum was like, we're not going to swim. We're going to enjoy it. We're not going to touch, take anything because we're not from here. We're grateful that we're here.
That, I think, is such a beautiful image. And that idea, though, of throwing the rocks into the water to say, hello, we're here.
Yes.
This is a sign that we're here.
Yeah. It's something like I'd never known that before. Again, I'd never been so remote. But, you know, it's something I learned, something new that I learned from my culture. And it just shows how special and how wonderful the Aboriginal culture really is.
And you are inspiring a whole new generation of women. What does that do for you?
I feel really proud. When I started to be a model and set off on my journey, I never thought in a million years that I'd even be in a magazine. I had the aim of being in a Kmart catalogue because I'd flick through as a young girl, you know, after school, never been in a Kmart catalogue. So Kmart, if you want to, you know, make my dream come true, please.
Yes, you can have a Vogue cover girl.
Yeah. But yeah, just to know that there are so many Aboriginal girls, boys, non-Indigenous boys and girls that look up to me, it makes my career so much more meaningful. I'm not just a girl in the pages of a magazine. They've seen my journey, they've followed my career, and I'm honoured that people were even interested in my career and aspire to look up to me. So it's a really proud moment. I'm very thankful.
Did you ever think you'd be on the cover of your own memoir?
Oh, God, no. That in itself, like I say, my Vogue cover, and it will always be my be-all and end-all of my pinnacle. But like, I just wrote a book. Like, that's pretty cool too. Like, they're the same now. So I can't just keep saying my Vogue cover now. I've got to say my book as well.
And this is something that your mum can also add to.
Yes.
She's got this incredible... It sounds like it's more than a wall in her house of you.
It's the whole house. But now she's, after many years, I was like, Mum, it looks like you only have one kid. You've got to add. So the whole family's on the wall, but she's got like big posters and things of when I was 17, like a Just Jeans campaign poster. She'd go into the shops and ask them, can she have them after? She's got absolutely everything, every newspaper clipping laminated from when I started. So nothing's ever going. I'll never be forgotten. Yeah.
Well, let's hope too. There's got to be room for her new granddaughter as well.
Oh, she'll make room. I was like, just take some pictures of mine off. It's fine.
I really want to talk more about this incredible voice that you now have.
Yeah.
Compared to when you were a young girl who was painfully shy, you wouldn't really speak, and you're sort of agency and agents would say, you know, speak up.
Or, say something.
Don't just whisper.
Yeah. Yeah. As you said, I was painfully shy. Like from the age of 13, I think I found my voice at like 25, maybe a bit before, but as silly as it sounds, it was so hard to kind of project my voice. I would walk into the agency, everyone's super lovely at Sheet, but the thought of walking in and the desk is there and there's everyone sitting on the desk, saying hello to them was like, oh my God. Like I kind of had to amp myself up to say hello.
And why do you think that was, that you were so shy?
I don't know. I'm a quiet person in general, but I don't know. Maybe I always wanted to be a model. That's all I ever wanted to do. Maybe I didn't believe in myself. And at such a young age, you know, I've got media publications going, this girl's amazing. She's going to be this, she's going to be that. And I still didn't believe in myself, you know, and at the same time, I'm 13. So, you know, no 13-year-old knows what they want anyway. Or if they believe in themselves at 13, good for them. They are very confident.
Well, exactly. Look out world. Because I think back to when I was 13, I didn't believe in myself.
Yeah.
And it is hard to find your voice. When you would be in front of the camera in those early days, how hard was that?
Oh, that was even worse. I was excited to be modeling, but it's not, you just don't stand there. Like, you've got to connect with your eyes. And when someone says to you, just connect with your eyes, you're like, what does that mean? Like, I don't even know what that means. But it's just the agency would help me and they'd try and show me. It took very many years. They were probably getting very frustrated with me. But it was worth the wait, guys.
But clearly, though, they knew that you had this sort of fairy dust, this magic around you.
I would like to hope so. Well, I've been with Chic for 22 years. Models change and go to different agencies. They're like family now. Like, why would I wreck a good thing? Like, you know, they've been there from the beginning and they've helped me throughout my career and always been there. So I'm very grateful to have them in my lives.
And your mum came along, obviously, with that first meeting with the agency because she really needed to know that who you would be signing with was like a family.
Yes, 100%. Like, well, I guess you say you're signing away your daughter's life, not signing away her life, but it's still a very intimidating thing to be doing. I'm sure you would think that with your daughter. But yeah, mum just wanted to make sure that they had my best interests at heart because, you know, some agencies can say that they have their best interest in. Absolutely, like you're just a number, you're just a, you know, just another pay packet. But Chic, they're amazing. I can't praise them enough. When I would fly to Sydney, I would stay at Kathy's house with her family. They would drive me to different castings. They were very aware that I was a young girl from Tweed Heads, had never been to Sydney, and they were very caring.
You've said that Vogue is the pinnacle. Were there any other sort of pinch yourself moments where you were thinking, oh my goodness, I cannot believe that this is happening?
Another pinch me moment would have been when I was an ambassador for David Jones alongside Miranda Kerr. Like, it's Miranda Kerr. Like, I'm just Samantha Harris from Tweed Heads. I'm not a Victoria's Secret angel. I'm just little old me. And we shot in Palm Springs. We went to New York and shot, which was absolutely amazing. They flew us business class, which even that was a pinch me moment. But it was such a lovely experience just to be able to, you know, David Jones is such a well-known department store. Everyone knows David Jones. And to see your face in the shop, I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is more than I've ever dreamt of. But also in saying that, my whole career, because it's been all different. You know, I've worked with so many amazing people, been to so many amazing locations. I'm living my dream and I'm so happy.
And you're still living your dream.
Yes.
And really, you're about to become a mum.
Yeah.
And this is a whole other really extraordinary chapter that you can add to your next book, Samantha.
Yes. Well, another mother-daughter book. Just wait till she's a little bit older.
Exactly. In your book, you talk about a little girl, Bella.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you're going to name your daughter Bella, your own daughter.
I am. Bella, I met her through Make-A-Wish and her wish was to meet me, but she loved Home and Away. So they went up to Summer Bay, up in the Northern Beaches, and she didn't know that I was meeting her. So they were staying at, I think it was a Novotel at the time in Manly. I remember thinking in my head, I'm like, because she's sick. I'm like, I don't want her to think that I think she's sick. She's just a little girl that I'm meeting. So I went to Build-A-Bear and I made her. I didn't make her a teddy bear. I made her a monkey because when you're sick, you get teddy bears. So I was making sure that I was there just to meet her. I'll never forget when she walked out because I was sitting at the front with her mum and I've turned around and I was like, hi, Bella. And all she said was, wow. And I was like, oh, that's really lovely. Like, I don't think I'm wow, but she must think I'm wow. And we hung out all afternoon. I couldn't tell you what we did. We just chatted and just walked along Manly and just enjoyed our time together. And when she left, I befriended her on Facebook. So we would talk on Facebook and just, again, about anything and everything. And on her 13th birthday, she went to see Finding Dory with her grandparents. And I asked her if it was good and said it was a great movie. And I think what wasn't too far after she relapsed. And she was only 13 for a few days and she passed away. So I said to my husband, I was like, if we ever have a daughter, and this is over 10 years ago as well, I was like, if we ever have a daughter, we're naming her Bella. So, yeah.
That is so beautiful. Aww. That is such a beautiful thing.
And she, like, No one ever in my life has looked like me. And she was a dead ringer. Like, she looked like my little sister. And we just connected. And she was such a beautiful little girl and taken too soon.
What a wonderful way, and such a special way to honour her and remember her.
She'll never be forgotten. Well, she's, to this day, she's never forgotten. I know when her birthday is, and then I know when it's her birthday. It's not too long is when she passed away. And I just think about her family and, you know, yeah.
What a beautiful woman you are.
Oh, thank you.
You really are, inside and out, with the most gorgeous heart.
Oh, thank you.
What would you say to your Bella if she says, I want to be a model mum?
Do you know what? If that's something that she wanted to do, that's totally fine, because there are no 13-year-old models anymore, which is great. I think the age is it 17? 17 or 18 now, which is amazing. And I wouldn't just say yes straight away. I would make sure it's something that she wanted to do and, you know, why she wanted to do it. But, yeah, like, you know, imagine saying no.
That's it.
Yeah, you'd be like, no, you can't. She'd be like, you were one. No, you don't get to be one.
Is there anything that your mum has said to you about being a mum? Has she given you some advice yet?
Not yet. When I first told her that I was pregnant, like, she didn't know what to say. She was shocked. Like, obviously happy shocked, but it took her a few days to kind of understand what was processing what it was. I guess being in tweed too, like, to hear it on the phone, it's not the same thing. Well, I was talking to her the other day and I keep telling her to come to Sydney to visit so we can celebrate the book together, go have a nice dinner. Because she said when she received hers, she felt like, you know, she goes, I couldn't celebrate it with anyone. Like, it was just kind of her looking at the book. So I said, Mum, come to Sydney and we'll hang out and we'll celebrate together. And we're having a chat and I was like, oh, you've got to come here soon because we can't celebrate soon because I'll have the baby. And she was like, well, I'll come in the room. And I was like, no, Mum. You can wait. You can wait for me. Wait for me and her to come out and say hello.
I wonder, though, given reading about your mum and her determination.
She'll be there.
I feel like she
might be knocking on the door.
Not even knocking. I feel like she might just be coming on through.
Oh, God. You never know.
Also, too, with you saying with your mum, it taking a few days to sort of sink in.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's to do with as well, because I think about my daughters, they're always your little girls.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Oh, that could have been it.
So perhaps for her, you're her little girl. And this idea that her little girl
is having a little girl.
Yes.
Yeah, that could have been it. Well, she was happy for my brothers, but I guess at the same time, my brothers weren't carrying the baby. So it's a different kind of thing. So, yeah, she's very excited now. And she has been looking at all like little sparkly fairy, like, you know, like tutu dresses. I used to wear party dresses when I was younger to go to birthday parties. So I was always a very extravagant little girl. So she's already looking at dresses like that for her.
Well, I tell you what a lucky little girl Bella is going to be, having a mum like you and a beautiful grandmother.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much, Samantha, for sharing some of your remarkable story with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Samantha is beautiful inside and out. What a story that she has. And her beautiful memoir that she has written with her mum, Role Model, is out now. I really recommend it. I think you'd love to read it over the summer. And if you love this chat with Samantha, there are so many more incredible conversations waiting for you here on the Jessro Big Talk Show. Hit subscribe, it's free, and it means you'll never ever miss a dose of Big Talk when a new episode lands. And if you know someone who would really connect with this episode, all you need to do to share it with them is to tap those three little dots. It is the easiest way to spread the Big Talk love and to help our podcast community grow. And if this conversation left you thinking or feeling something big, I reckon you'd also love my chat with Elle McPherson. You'll find the link waiting for you in the show notes.
So I got it all together. This is cool. I'm cool. Everything's perfect. I didn't look like what I thought was somebody who was out of control. I certainly didn't really feel out of control because I was so controlled. And until, you know, when I was in rehab about 21 days in, it all sort of came crashing down.
The Jess Rowe Big Talk Show is hosted by me, Jess Rowe. Executive producer, Nick McClure. She's a wonderful leopard lady. Audio imager, Nat Marshall. Until next time, remember to live big. Life is just too crazy and glorious to waste time on the stuff that doesn't matter. Okay, now it is time to explore, because now it's time to tell you a little bit more about Explore Worldwide's new Amalfi Coast Discovery Tour. Imagine lemon groves, little cliffside villages, staying in a family-run hotel where the pasta is definitely better than anything you've made at home. Even better, it can all be yours for less, with up to 20% off in Explore Worldwide's Big Blue Sale on now. Click the link in the episode description or book at exploreworldwide.com.au, and don't just travel, explore.